Welcome back to Brush with Creativity. Jeff and I've got a special treat for you today. We're talking with Jared Williams. Jared is one of those creative individuals that are almost impossible to put into a single box. So we will explore with him a number of his projects. Jared is a wealth of information and someone who is truly inspiring as a creative. We hope that you enjoy listening to this interview as much as Jeff and I had conducting it. So without further delay, here is the Jared Williams interview.
So this is Jared Williams. How are you?
Doing good. And thanks for having me today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us about yourself.
I think I was born artistic. I've been like that actually since a young kid. Nobody really knew where I got it from. So even when I used to sketch as a kid, people used to think I would trace, but there was something about it that just came naturally to me. Lighting, shadows, proportions, composition. I don't know what it was, but I've always been creative and artistic. And then it manifested in different ways, actually. So, throughout high school, I used to love art class, obviously, but I also loved shop class. Those are two things I actually did exceptionally well at.
Gotcha.
And then trained, actually, to be a mechanic. So I'm actually ASC certified. That was actually, though, where I developed that passion for digital technology, though.
And really?
So I was trying to figure out how I married the two together.
Mm.
And I wound up finding this advertising program. And then I wound up going to college for that and started working in design and worked in design for a good 20 years. And so, in different ways, right? It started out, my first design job was working for a real estate broker. So it was just a lot of, print work, doing work for the realtors, flyers, postcards.
I see.
And that's actually when I got into large format printing. One of the vendors actually used to love what I was sending them. And they're like, it's always set up right. It looks nice. So they offered me a job. And so then I actually got in, I was really big into vehicle wraps. In fact, I competed in a national automotive art competition. I did well in that.
That's amazing. Wow. So what year was that you did vehicle wraps? Because they haven't been around that long, have they?
That was probably around 2006 is when I was really like heavily into it. To 3M wrap school. I had wrapped hundreds of vehicles, actually, and boats. I've done boats, airplanes, motorcycle tanks. I mean, you gotta name it. I've almost wrapped everything. I did the first smart car in the state of Florida.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it was pretty neat. So, and I drove it. It's kind of like riding a lawnmower. You stomp the gas, but it doesn't really do anything. But it was, I used to really enjoy it and because I got to not only design, but that's actually where my automotive knowledge came into play as well. So I would take off mirrors. I would take off anything I could actually, right? I'd rip a car apart, take out the lights. And that way I didn't have to cut on the paint. It's a little more seamless, and it's clean that way. Automotive training came into play somehow in the art world. And then, I wound up taking this job at this staffing company as a designer. And I wound up inheriting the marketing department. So I was overseeing marketing and, all creative, had this big, in-house, production department, and doing a lot of promotional items and So I even did a lot of package design as well.
Oh, cool.
I was doing packaging for hot sauce and cameras. I mean, you gotta name it. We did so much stuff. In fact, I even did more vehicle wraps when I was there.
Oh, wow.
One of those big Ford 750s with the Tampa Bay Rays.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like quite an undertaking. My goodness.
Yeah. And then it was actually in that industry, it gave me a lot of exposure. That particular company had 22 sister companies. And I was getting into all kinds of things, right? Manufacturing. I actually put up a wind turbine one weekend. There was all kinds of things that I was doing in there. I did architectural renderings. And so I've wow. dabbled in the area of design in a lot of different mm-hmm. ways. And I met this consultant there and we just kind of clicked. He really liked what I was doing and then started roping me into some of his projects. So I was doing a lot of like sports foundation work, sports celebrity work. So a lot of the football players, NHL players, Terry Costa, I was doing work, you know, for a lot of their assets as well. And then that turned into more getting more into UI. And so I started working in sports. So I was doing some work with Major League Baseball, NFL. I was actually hired on to do some NFL flag work to help digitize the equipment ordering. And then, yeah, from there, I really liked the digital world. I really liked UI design. And I was getting introduced into UX and what that was.
I see.
So I started dabbling in UX. And then I spent about 10 years in SaaS startups. I still loved working in the drone industry. That was probably one of the most fun, you know, and helped integrate drones into, national airspace. There was a program.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and a tool called Lattice, which was software and hardware. But I really liked that industry. It was really interesting and doing, you know, flows for the algorithms. So started doing drone insurance, working in that. And then,
oh, wow.
And then I made my way into the enterprise and I was, you know, managing a UX team. And then I went to another enterprise as a design lead and worked on something that was, I would say, more design ops than it was UX. A context-based framework that was supposed to unify design teams or design approaches. But then I wanted to do something else, try to do my own thing. And so now I've been on my own since 2023. And so I do some freelance and, but I got into AI pretty heavily. I mean, I had the time, so I spent every single day, just figuring out how these tools work, what they do. And I really took a liking to both the text model and the image model side. I actually worked both sides. So for me, it was, because I'm also a writer. And so, I think that helps, on the text model side.
I gotcha.
But it also does help on the image model side as well, right? Because you're still writing these descriptions. You're using a structure to your prompts, but even how you're evaluating outputs, right? So for instance, it wasn't that long ago, a friend of mine was saying, like, I can't get this full body image. And I don't know if you remember that post, but I'm looking at the prompt and I'm like, well, you're talking about detail on a face, right? And so when we think about that, like sometimes okay, if you're adding all this detail on the face and you're not getting a full body image, it's because you need to start adding details about what's missing, right? Pants, shoes, gotcha. Round. And so you almost have to have this balanced type of description, I'd say.
Yeah. So, I do remember that post. Yeah.
And then there's you know, sometimes the models are, it's really tricky to get what you want. In fact, in Dolly, just recently, I was trying to get this figure kind of coming out of a wall. And it didn't quite understand what I meant by emerging out of a wall.
I saw that picture. Yeah.
Well, the other one that I did, what I had to do, that's a Midjourney one, but the Dolly version, what I actually had to do to get the effect that I wanted I told it to pretend the person was made of wax and submerged in milk. And that was actually the way to get actually an output that I was looking for. And so you almost have to back up and say, okay, how would I describe this a completely different way? Mm-hmm. Texture, color, right? And so you kind of have to think outside the box a bit, right? Think a little bit differently and almost the way you describe it. Like, we have to remember, yes, it's using natural language, but you're still talking to a machine. And so when it doesn't understand you, you just have to tell it or describe it a totally different way.
I see.
And I think it helps though, right? If you have that kind of mental picture in your head of like, okay, I could see somebody laying in milk and that kind of resembling them emerging from a wall. And so, but it takes a lot of experimentation, but then you kind of understand the nuance to it all and you can work your way around some of the limitations.
Yeah, I think I got what you're saying, because they do really coincide when you think about it, the written language and then the visual language. And then there's this kind of a bridge between, and where we can write only so much and we have to turn to that other side, the visual side, to be able to really pull it off. Absolutely. If you could make the world a better place, the world would be a better place if.
I had multiple answers for that one. But
I like that.
You know, and this is just me personally, I think the world would be a better place if there was no social media. And if people were more open-minded. And the reason why I say that is because as loneliness has been increasing since the 1970s, right? And so it correlates with the advancement of technology. And so I find it somewhat ironic that the more connected we get digitally, the more lonely we become. And that's, I think it's mainly because we actually lose that human to human interaction.
Absolutely.
Especially now, right? We're interacting with bots or AI generated content a lot of the time. And I don't say that to criticize people, but now we're no longer really getting that human to human interaction. And actually that was a really big piece behind Campfire. It was because you know, we're all looking for belonging. That is a primal need. It does not go away. It's literally like, it's just baked into our DNA.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Let me get them caught up on that. So when he talks about Campfire, he's talking about the company and the brand that he's building. Would that be the best way to put it?
Yeah, it would be. I think, you know, the Campfire got ignited, and how that started actually was, I won't tell the whole entire story. What I'll say is this, though. The short version is I found myself in my career aligning to somebody else's values and kind of losing myself in that. And so I had kind of become, quite honestly, unhappy at some point, and I couldn't figure out why. And so I did this program to kind of help identify, right, who was I? What was I about anymore? Like, I didn't even know what my interests were. I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do, right? I was one of those people pleasers.
I gotcha.
And so I really had no clue. Like, but anyways, what I did discover though in there was, number one, what my intrinsic motivators were. But number two was, there was something that I had also identified in that whole entire process. And there was a lot of people that used to come to me and ask for my advice or for my help. Yes. And so I never really understood why. It's just, I've kind of always gone my own way is the way I describe it. And yeah. I don't really, don't get me wrong, I was into people pleasing, but I always did it my way. And so,
I see.
And I was kind of fearless, right? Like I'd have a plan and I knew that it was better to make a decision than to not make one at all. And so I think it's what got people behind me, and they found me approachable and friendly, and I don't judge. And so I came up with this, you know, the glow from a campfire off the path less traveled. It's because I was trying to do things. I wasn't trying to follow the norms. I was trying to do things differently, uniquely, my own way. And I do think there are people that they like that, right? And they appreciate that. And you know, they want to do the same. And so they're looking for guidance. And that's what Campfire was initially about, was like, you know, when you sit at a campfire, like you don't sit around the campfire with strangers. It's usually, it's intimate, it's friendly.
Yeah.
And anybody can sit around the fire, right? It's that safe place that you could kind of just talk casually, right? And that I was trying to get some of that, the polished, what I call fakeness, right?
Like
out of business in a sense, right? So, you know, you're in a corporate environment and people act one way, and then you go to happy hour and it's like you're talking to different people.
Well, I see.
Yes, that's true.
And it kind of drove me crazy, quite honestly. I'm like, why can't we just be real all the time and instead of putting on this show? And so really I wanted Campfire to be that place where like you don't go to Campfire and then have me be all polished up with this, you know, super slick, you know, or persuasive pitch. It's you get me. You get all the ums and ahs with it as well, right? And I just wanted it to be real. I wanted it to be casual. I wanted it to be, you know, not anything high pressure either. And it's like you could come and you could say what your challenges are without consequence, right? So that's how Campfire was what I'd say ignited. And then it'd be kind of...
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And so then it kind of took some different turns along the way. And I still think it is. So I'm still
concerned. It sure did.
It did. Because I initially wanted Campfire to be like more of a community. But I'm not sure what that is. And quite honestly, I initially wanted it to be, I was going to go in this AI direction with it. But I'm not sure that was right for it, because what I find with AI is it actually removes a lot of personalization.
Gotcha.
Even though people talk about personalizing experiences and content with AI, I'm like, and again, it's not to criticize folks, but I'm like, that's not quite it, right? It's not very personal when you're dealing with a machine. It's just not. And there are some folks that are doing incredible work with AI. It's really not, you know, we see a lot on LinkedIn, right? You see all these prompts and it's all marketing and sales. That's just a tiny little sliver of what AI does though, and its capabilities. Yeah. And it's not what I wanted for Campfire. That is actually the opposite of what I wanted for Campfire. So I've kind of turned away from that because I'm like, it didn't fit. It wasn't fitting. But you know, AI is giving me, it's become an incredible tool for me in a lot of different ways, especially with creativity.
That's what I was going to ask. Tell us a little bit about, you know, since you're so involved in AI, as a creative person, and by the way, your story about your, you know, creative career is truly inspiring. I mean, there's so many twists and turns and different things that you availed yourself the opportunity to grow into. It was just, I was kind of a little bit mesmerized, but you know, as you're into this AI, I'm going to set up my question a little bit. One of the things that I hear a lot from people who are kind of really in that AI environment on a regular basis, I'm in it pretty regularly myself too, is, and I think this came up on Kurt Jamongel's Toe podcast as well recently, but there is an increasing kind of feeling amongst people who are on these things like ChatGPT on a daily basis, where they're finding it more difficult to interact with other human beings because this is so quick, right? So quick, it gets to the point, it gets them everything. It's like, it's almost like it becomes more tedious to have human conversation for some people.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that really interesting. And I'm kind of interested in what your take is on that. And then my follow-up question to that would be like, tell us a little bit about, like, as a creative person, what is your kind of, for lack of a better word, what is your relationship with AI and kind of how does that work?
So number one, I could definitely see why interacting with AI so much could make it actually more difficult to then interact with humans, right? You're, I mean, they're prediction models, right? And so, and depending on, you know, it's also, despite it having these inherent biases, it's actually eliminating a lot of things that a normal person would say. And it is way more efficient and it is fast and it's really giving you what you're asking for. And that's not how humans work. It's just, so I get it, right? I ask a question and I get, you know, kind of this perfect answer. And that's, but that's not how humans work. And so technically, unless you're assigning it different personalities all the time, you're technically getting this, again, ideal or perfect answer in sometimes a very succinct way. And we don't always do that, right? There's times where I'm going to give a long-winded answer instead of that simple yes or no. And I think we're getting a little bit too accustomed to instantaneous results.
Yes.
It's so... you know, we had a talk about AI companions not that long ago, and yes, I advocate for it, but I initially didn't. I really didn't.
Oh, wow.
But I was really torn on it. I was like, I was at first somewhat appalled by it, but then you start getting into it, and yes, there's risk in there, but there's a lot of benefits to some people as well. And that ties back to that loneliness piece we were talking about.
Yeah.
So I would agree, because it's if you're interacting with AI that much and then start interacting with humans, it's almost like humans aren't that. Well, some of them are, right? They're very efficient with their communication, but a lot of us aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to give perfect answers, and we are going to say things that you don't want to hear. And AI doesn't do that, right? It doesn't want to hurt your feelings. And it's it almost creates this disillusioned idea of what communication is.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're expecting, right, like all these really nice, heartfelt answers, right? It's stroking your ego. It's really supportive. And it's not giving you the cold hard truth of, like, you know what, like, you need to upskill there because you're not putting in the effort, or you know what, you're not doing this the right way, or you know what, you're wrong. And people are going to do that, but that machine won't. like not in the way that we communicate it. Getting into the subject of how I interact with AI, it really depends. In fact, what I find is, for me, number one, it's a creative outlet, but it's also part of this creative process. And so I get to release what's in my head quickly. Mm-hmm. And part of that is a necessity for me. I happen to have a very active and wild imagination. And the way I, again, is I kind of describe it. If you imagine like a 35 millimeter film reel going 100 miles per hour, like that's what's in my head at any given time. And so I actually use AI to get my head cleared. I create things that I'm thinking about, but I eventually get into something that I latch on to where I'm like, and I also use it now to help tell my stories. Like I love to write. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love to write. And I don't like to download people's prompts. I don't like to use their templates. I don't want to use their hooks. I want to do something different and expressive. And AI is really, for me, it's an incredible tool because I could create an image of anything I'm thinking of, no matter how absurd it is.
Yes.
And the problem I had doing it manually, it's like sometimes the thoughts disappear, right? It's like I can't get it done fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so AI actually keeps pace with my mind.
Gotcha.
But it lets me explore a lot of different ideas really quickly. And it helps tell my story because I could write my story. Most of the times I don't need to add that story to like a ChatGPT to say, okay, what type of image can I make with this? There are times that I have just so I could get ideas. Gotcha. But a lot of times too, it's the images that'll evoke, right, the idea for the story. And so it's odd the way I'll latch on to what's going on in my brain. And so sometimes it's through writing first, but sometimes it's through the image and that informs the writing.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's that kind of goes into that bridge that I was talking about, that they kind of bridge to one another and you could go to one side or the other to get to the same place. Absolutely.
Yeah. I love the way you're talking about AI in the sense that, and this is what I'm cueing into as I'm hearing you talk about this. You're saying I'm creating, I'm writing, I'm creating, I'm writing. And I'm thinking to myself, how many people, you know, are probably screaming at their, at the air right now thinking, no, it's the AI creating. But I think what you're cueing into here is that there's a technology that's being used, you know, much like a tool. A lot of people, I'm a painter and I remember, you know, growing up as a kid doing airbrushes on kind of like you did vehicle wraps. I did cars and motorcycle helmets and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Right. You know, and, you know, but there was people even back in the 1980s when I was a kid in high school and picked up the airbrush for the first time that would say, that's not really painting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brush, like with horse hairs, right. You know, it's cheating somehow. There's always, I think, you know, and photographers, like, geez, when the camera first came out and everything, it was in, you know, there's people who were like, no, that's not landscape painting, you know. But it's a tool, you know. Talk to us a little bit about like where your thoughts are around that being a tool in the creative process. And I just, as a person who has ADHD, I absolutely love what you're saying about like it helps me get those ideas out faster.
Yeah.
Well, I feel you because I've been told I'm also ADHD. It's so,
I see.
But I kind of refuse to accept it. I'm just like, I know I'm a bit different. I have some of the symptoms, but so I'm also a traditional artist as well. In fact, I had an art company at one point, and I'll still occasionally do art by hand, and I've done it a lot of different ways, different mediums. So I do sketch, you know, I do traditional painting. I've done digital paintings. I've done wooden artwork. And the way I look at art is it's just expression, right? It's a message of some sort. It's expression. And to me, and I still stand by this, it's the creator who gets to decide whether or not it's art. there's a lot of people, and I know how they feel about it, and it doesn't impact the way I feel about it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is stolen imagery, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I think the way they think about it, though, it's because the speed of it, because that you can produce something so fast that's trained on other people's artwork, but it's not like for me, and I made it a personal decision. I don't use any artist names in any of my prompts. What I'm doing is I'm essentially writing a paragraph to describe what I'm seeing in my head. Wow. I'm trying to describe textures. And so, and after a while, you understand what something will look like. Like, for instance, melting wax. It happens to be a description that I absolutely love, and it creates some beautiful creations. And so I still stand by it. You can create something in AI. I think it's up to the creator whether or not, right, they want to call it art or not. Mm-hmm. I look at it and I don't dismiss or discredit anybody's work. I just say what I do is I create AI images. Mm. If somebody else wants to call it art, great. And some people do. I've been referred to as an AI artist. And I think there is such thing, right? Like, people are they kind of act as if all prompts are equal. And that is not true.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is completely untrue. I mean, I've written some prompts that are incredibly detailed. I mean, down to a poster, right, on a wall, burning barrels in the background, right? Like, you're really telling it, again, like you're painting a scene, like a movie scene. Yes. Imagine kind of going through just a photo and describing everything you're seeing. So, and getting what you want is actually not that easy.
Right.
Yes. To get something exact can be incredibly time consuming and frustrating, especially when it comes to people. Actually, think to get a very particular look and expression in the ones that want it to be real looking.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually harder than some folks imagine. And so, but I look at it as it's still creative. It's still a creative output. I think it can still, it's a symbol or an expression of some kind. It can evoke emotion. And so for me, it kind of has all the same pieces that traditional artwork does. It's just a different tool. And that's all it is, right? It's a different tool in a digital medium. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you look at cameras, right? It used to be film, or there was Polaroid, and then it went to, you know, 35 millimeter, and then it went to digital. So does that mean digital photography, not real photography?
I know when you look at it, right? I absolutely say that, unfortunately, in my mind.
Yeah.
Well, and that's okay. Like, for me, I look at it as I'm like, you're still looking through a lens. You're still framing a subject. Mm-hmm. How it's captured is a little bit differently, right? There's a little more automation to that versus that manual. And so, again, it depends on the creator. In my mind, I don't know if that answers the question fully. I don't try to dance around it. I tell people flat out, like, if I create something with intention, to express a certain idea or message, how is that not art?
Yeah, I agree. I think, and it's a beautiful answer. I mean, and thank you for that. That gave me a lot to think about. I think one of the things when I usually think about artists and how we tend to be highly protective over our particular viewpoints on art, I think it really boils down to just the fact that human beings are tribal by nature, right?
Mm.
It goes back to our, you know, evolutionary roots, right? You know, and so as every human being wants to be part of a tribe, so to say, or be multiple tribes, you know, anytime that you select a tribe to be part of, you select an infinite number of other tribes that you're not going to be part of, right? So, you know, if you're going to be an AI artist, you know, you're obviously going to alienate a group of artists over here who don't think AI has any place in doing art. Just like in the 1980s, if you were an airbrush artist, you probably, you know, we're never going to see your work in one of those, you know, highbrow art magazines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you will, though, right? Because now it's an accepted form of art, just as brush painting was. But I think one of the other interesting things that you were talking about in there is that you've been known as an AR artist, but you also talk about painting and drawing and stuff. So my question is, what are you if you go in and you use your own prompts, right, to create a AI image that you love, and then you turn around and paint that on a canvas? Are you still an AI artist? I mean,
it's
whatever you want to be. There's no wrong answer, but it does beg the question of like, are you less of a painter or a sketch artist if you draw from a photograph or a magazine or a collage? You know,
I mean, it's a good question. I'm not sure there's one answer for it, because I think it's different for everybody. I remember one of my projects was enlarging a photo by hand, right? So I essentially did a photocopy by hand, right? So I had to enlarge it, and it's all done through sketch. It's all pencil work, and we used the grid to do it. Uh-huh. And so I duplicated it. Is it art, or is it just technique? I don't know. I look at, there's a lot of woodworkers now using AI for inspiration. And so when we look at it that way, it's like, okay, I'm looking for some inspiration and ideas, but then the final output is handcrafted. So yes. What does that make it? Is it, and again, you know, but it's funny. People that are artists that paint like these realistic paintings, I mean, don't get me wrong, it takes talent to do.
Yes.
But when you look at it, it's like, but it took zero creativity in my mind.
Oh, okay.
That's how I look at it. And that's not to discredit their work. It's saying that with enough practice, I could duplicate a photo or the look of it with enough practice and paint.
Yes.
Is that creative, or is that just learning technique and applying it? To me, it's just a tactical application. Mm-hmm. It didn't take this. It's not thinking of like, how else do I see that image? So like when I did dog portraits, pet portraits, I didn't duplicate what a dog looked like. It's not how it worked with me. In fact, I had to talk with people to understand what was their dog's personality. What did you know them for? And then I would ask them to send me three different photos. So I did this, what I call derivative art, but it was almost like a slight abstraction from it, because it would flash, right? I couldn't just paint any photo. I couldn't. I had to only do the one, like I would know it when I saw it. And there's times people sent me photos and I'm like, I got nothing from it, but it would flash. It would flash in my head. And then it's up to me to say, okay, like I have to duplicate what I just saw in my head based on what they told me about the dog, combined with that photo. And sometimes the way that manifested, it was just, again, it wasn't a photo. It was representative of the dog and their personality. And actually I only had one customer out of 300 and something commissions that wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. And that's because she sold her dog and didn't want to pay for the artwork.
It's messed up.
So there's a flashpoint, you know, in how the image comes to you. One of the things I talk a lot about on our previous shows is where inspiration ideas come from, right? And so we have this biochemical electrical response in your neural network of your brain, right? But that bioelectrical discharge between neurons in your brain is not Mozart. It's not Picasso. My electrical outlet in my studio does not produce music unless I hook up something and you know. So where do you think these ideas that you have, and you've got a head full of ideas. I mean, just
oh, yeah.
Career and thinking and all of the things that you're into and things like that. There's just, it seems to be a constant flow of ideas / inspiration that come to you in your own. And again, there's no right or wrong answers to this, but when you think about where that comes from, where do you think those come from?
I think it's just things that it's probably a mixture, right, of what I have seen, a lot of what I feel. I think it's that, right? Sometimes it's just like curiosity. I mean, I'm cursed with it, quite honestly. Like,
goodness,
what would this look like with this, right? Or, and it's just odd, right? Or I may think, like, I look at a photo and say, okay, like, what about if I only did the shadows? Like, could this work? And what else could I do with those shadows besides just like a blob, right, of darkness on a canvas? Like, how else could I make that interesting, right? And so I'll explore, and I've seen different, right, like continuous line art. And so I'll combine some different styles together. And then I tend, when I was doing artwork, I actually tended to go in like these phases where I'd like have this type of style, and then all of a sudden it would just stop. And wow. I never knew why. It would just stop, and I would have this different idea.
I can relate to that. Totally relate.
Right? You do it, and then it's like all of a sudden you do this just new piece, and you get into that for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then it's like... So, and I've actually met other artists that have, they've said similar things, right? Mm-hmm. They go through these kind of phases, but I think I draw inspiration from a lot of different places, right? It can be from nature. You see textures, colors, just a lot of different, you know, even around your kitchen, right? I mean, you look at that and it's like, I've got pieces of art that have got, you know, chain, it's got sandpaper, right? And like all these different elements on there, right? To make this piece. And it's a wild looking, like tribal looking dog. It's actually kind of cool. But, and I don't know, honestly, where some of it comes from. Even I wonder, like people have asked me, like, where do you get these ideas? And I'm like, I don't know. They just arrive. And I think it's just this combination of like all this intake around me. That would be my best answer, I guess.
That kind of stimulation of how much is your environment that stimulating that creativity? Like, you know, behind you right now, you've got Christina's world, and you know, you're walking by that every day, and you know, does that influence what you put on canvas or what you put through AI? Yeah, I think it does have a lot to do with environment. Absolutely. We're getting to the end of our hour with you. Can you tell us a little bit about how we can find you online, how we can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so my current website is campfireglow.co. And I am on LinkedIn. Those are the two primary places I am. I'm not really huge on social media, so LinkedIn is kind of my preferred platform. And I haven't published on Medium in a long time, but I've been thinking about picking that up. But I think I actually just rather publish blogs on my website.
Gotcha.
And I think that's going to be more probably web related or web design related, but also creativity and AI play into that. So I think it's going to be a mixture of things. In fact, because it's so broad, in fact, that's kind of why I like it, is I can use AI writing, design, accessibility, and SEO in like within that one role. And it wound up being a really good kind of fit for me. Although that's taken a long time to kind of land at that realization. And you can be an artistic, right? So
yes,
all that comes together as one, and it seems to be a good fit. But yeah, so just, you know, between campfireglow.co and LinkedIn are really the two primary places to find me.
Gotcha. So again, for our listeners, that's Jared Williams, and he's out of North Carolina. So...
Outstanding. We'll make sure we get all of the information for how to contact Jared and his and find him online in the show notes as well. Any last words before we sign off for another episode?
No, I mean, this was a blast. I mean, creativity, especially, is something I really enjoy talking about. Especially, AI, it's just design in general. Anything creative to me, whether that's woodworking, generating some weird stuff with AI or by hand, or even writing, right? It's still a form of creative and it's an art form. And so I think between all those, it's topics I really enjoy. And thank you guys so much for having me on. I know I enjoyed it. So.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've actually learned and learned a lot from you just in the short time we've been together. Also been very inspired. So
yes. Very.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. And I'm always happy to answer questions. Some people, I know AI tools can be frustrating sometimes, but I've worked with them enough to know how to get good outputs and do some workarounds, right? So the tools are actually getting more sensitive. So it's getting harder and harder if you're somebody like me, especially with this partial, not morbid, but kind of on the darker side. I watch a lot of horror with my wife. Right? We love that stuff. And I actually like a lot of that artwork, So for me, but that's getting harder and harder to produce, actually. Yes. The models, the bots are kind of rejecting a lot of my prompts lately. And so it's just a matter of getting creative to reword it in a way that kind of tricks the bots.
Yeah, I think it's a good challenge though for creative people, because in doing that, I think that it's going to probably help us to create images that maybe we didn't expect, right? So it's not all about just what we're trying to get out of our head and onto canvas, or but also there seems to be, and when I'm working in AI, I see this a lot. It's like there's a little bit of co-creativity going on there, right? There's a little ghost in the machine where you're not so captivated that you believe that this is a sentient, self-aware kind of construction, but there is something there. There's something that's going on, and maybe it's just the perception of something going on because of the interaction between the data models and the artist, right? And so that I find fascinating. Just absolutely love it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I would definitely agree. I mean, it is co-creation. I think that's a good way to put it. Some of my prompt fails. I mean, they're the most interesting outputs, honestly. Like some of them, I'm like, that is wild. It's not what I intended, but man, that's cool, right? And it actually winds up generating some ideas. And so even those mess ups can actually redirect you and give you new ideas.
That's a great point. That's a great point to end on too. Sometimes your mistakes are your greatest successes. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, again, thanks, Jared, for coming on and sharing that with us. Inspiring so many people. We sure appreciate you taking time out of your day to come and share that with us.
No problem. Well, thanks again for having me, guys. This was fun. It was nice to meet you.
Wow. That was both inspiring and fun. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. If you want to reach out and connect with Jared, you can find his information as well as the show notes at our website on www.brushwithcreativity.com. Have you ever noticed that amazing intro music that we're using for our interview shows now? Well, I know a guy. Bruce Gardner's an amazing musician and a member of the band Boxcar Preachers. He was kind enough to put together the show opening that Jeff and I have been using, and we're super thrilled to use it. Stay tuned in the future for an interview with Bruce that'll just knock your socks off. So, again, thank you for tuning in to another episode with Jeff and I. Remember, your creativity is a force to be reckoned with, and your unique ideas matter. We want to hear from you. Share your creative endeavors, your artistic triumphs, and your experiences with how you connect with your creativity. As always, remember that you can connect to us through our brand new website at www.brushwithcreativity.com. You will also be able to find us on social media. Feel free to drop us a message, comment, or even share your own creative journeys. We're all about fostering a community of like-minded individuals who appreciate the beauty in both art and the unknown. Again, thanks so much for spending your time with us. You are amazing, appreciated, and loved. And with that, we bid you farewell until the next episode. Keep those creative juices flowing, stay curious, and remember, together, creative people can change the world.